Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today, we're talking about an ever-increasing problem in America and a new alternative solution. That problem is addiction, whether the addiction is food, drugs, alcohol, sex, gambling, you name it. And the emerging alternative solution is based on the integration of the Buddhist philosophy and cognitive behavioral approaches. So today, we'll look at addictive behavior patterns, how to beat cravings using a new technique called urge surfing, and how to prevent relapse. My guests are Dr. Stephanie Goldstein and Dr. Elisha Goldstein, both of whom are in private practice as clinical psychologists. In addition, Drs. Elisha and Stephanie Goldstein are mindfulness coaches and consultants. Together, they co-authored the audio CD Mindful Solutions to Stress, Anxiety, and Depression, which we've talked about before, and they've just released Mindful Solutions to Addiction and Relapse Prevention, and that's what we'll be looking at today. So I'm going to bring on my guests and just share a little bit more of their background with you so you get to see how this all comes together. Both of you, welcome to the show, Dr. Elisha and Dr. Stephanie.
Thank you, Vicki.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, glad to have you back. And I wanted just to start off with, because I know... Dr. Stephanie, that you specialize in addiction medicine. So I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about your specialty. And I was looking on your website and it said that you're a trained practitioner in psychosynthesis, which is an integrative form of psychology focusing on the synthesis, healing, and growth of the self. So I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that and share with our listeners some of your background.
Sure, absolutely. So as part of my training, I completed a fellowship at Kaiser Permanente in San Francisco's Chemical Dependency Recovery Program, and which is where I became a trained addiction medicine specialist. And we worked a lot with Dr. Alan Marlatt's work, which he's created both the cognitive behavioral relapse prevention, as well as now he's creating the mindfulness-based relapse prevention, which is based on Jon Kabat-Zinn's mindfulness-based stress reduction. And there is really where I deepened my work as well as fell in love with this work, because it's just so many addictions affect all of us, whether it's that we personally are struggling one or that we have family members or friends that are struggling. And so through my experience there, I really felt a calling towards wanting to continue my work. And Elisha and I both have felt really drawn to mindfulness, and while working at Kaiser, I found it to be a really great fit, and then we have discovered all the research that's out there that is really supporting that as well. And then in addition, psychosynthesis is a theory that was created right around the same time as Freud was by Roberto Assagioli, who is an Italian psychoanalyst, and it's really the idea of synthesizing all the parts of ourselves, even the difficult ones and the challenging ones, and giving all those parts a voice and really allowing them to be an integrated whole self. And so I really, a lot of that informs my work as well.
Okay, very interesting. And Dr. Elisha, I know from talking with you before that you are a mindfulness trainer. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this.
Yeah, I'm a clinical psychologist as well as a mindfulness-based stress reduction teacher. How I came to that is through... Both being in sales and management many years ago and realizing and being able to make a tremendous amount of money and then losing it in the stock market, and realizing in that moment that there was more to life and thinking about the future and what to make next. And I learned how to be present, became in touch with more mindfulness and meditation practices, and then realized my calling was really in supporting people with their lives to do the same. And much how Stephanie's work in psychosynthesis is really to integrate the whole person, all parts of the self. Really, mindfulness allows us to be present, to be able to move through aware of also the, both the positive and the negative aspects of the self, or we can say the comfortable and uncomfortable parts.
Right.
And so I'm really happy to be here and really feel great about all the work that's being done out there right now in the area of mindfulness and stress reduction, and also mindfulness and addiction and relapse prevention.
And I should mention, let our listeners know that much of this work is actually being, you obviously are husband and wife team down in California, but much of the actual research on this mindfulness is actually being done out of Seattle, right?
Correct. At the University of Washington, through Dr. Alan Marlatt's team, they're doing a lot of really great research. They're completing a two-year study with the NIDA, which is the National Institute of Drug Abuse.
Yeah.
And they're actually also in the process of getting a five-year grant to continue the study, and the early results have shown really promising. And RCD, the Mindful Solutions for Anxiety and Relapse Prevention, is being written into the five-year grant that Dr. Marlatt is currently asking for, so it's pretty exciting.
Okay. Yeah, it's really exciting.
Well, let's take a look at addiction in America today. I was totally staggered, as I often am when I do research for the show, about some of the statistics out there. Prescription drugs, for one, they, according to the research I did, the fastest growing addiction ever. It said that the pharmaceutical industry has basically provided a full set of legal substitutes for just about every illegal narcotic available. And often the prescription drugs are swilled down with alcohol, and according to the statistics I read, kill approximately 20,000 people a year, which is nearly twice as many as 10 years ago. So what's happening with us?
Yeah, I thought you might ask a question like that, because I remember you being really interested in the prescription drug industry on our last call. And, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think the thing with the pharmaceutical industry, it's the highest grossing industry in our country, you know, and it's a business. And at the same time, there are really well-intentioned people within it that are really trying to support people, both
sure.
on a medical side and a psychiatric side. I know that through my own work with individuals, I have seen people very quick to, you know, as we say, pick up the pill. To be able to feel better about how they're doing. If there's any form of distress or any form of dis-ease, there's so much commercialization of that out there that it's becoming more and more accepted to just take medication. Now, on the other side of that, let me mention that, in some instances, medication is very important and very helpful for people, both medically and in a psychiatric sense. There's plenty of people out there who are depressed or stricken with intense anxiety, and they find it very difficult to even do the most basic things to be able to work on and move through their issues.
Yeah, and my intent really was not to bash the pharmaceutical companies.
Oh, right.
They do have some kind of blame there along the way, but
right.
you know, for example, my mother could not function without Madopar and Levodopa. Because she has Parkinson's disease, she would basically be in a comatose state.
Right.
Drugs are very essential. But, you know, when I was doing the research, it showed that a lot of people, especially younger kids,
yeah.
are abusing those. They're taking them as I didn't do it. They're taking it as people would take crack or, you know, heroin or whatever, but they've just found legal ways of getting the drugs now.
Well, because they're in everyone's medicine cabinet.
Yes, exactly.
They're not hard to get. And, you know, and I think the important thing for listeners to really focus on for themselves, if they're questioning whether they're either developing an addiction to prescription drugs or potentially, you know, going in that route, is to really notice, are you taking this as prescribed? Are you communicating with your doctor when you're taking more? Because, you know, there are times in which, due to chronic pain or other varying things, that you may need to take more. But if you're under doctor's advisement and that you're taking it as prescribed, you should be okay.
Right.
But that doesn't mean, you know, that you couldn't abuse it. And so it's just really important to watch.
Yeah. So let's talk about addiction some more, because prevalence of alcoholism, for example, they said 15.1 million people, 4.6 of those were women.
Yeah.
adults admitting to internet sexual addiction was at 10%, and 28% of those were women, which surprised me.
Mm.
And then, of course, we've got, you know, the food addiction and gambling addiction. What is it we're actually becoming addicted to? For example, in internet sexual addiction, I read that people become addicted to the neurochemical changes that take place in the body during the behavior. Is that what's driving the behavior, Stephanie?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was actually how addictions affect the brain, because I think that's such an important piece, and not that addiction is only an issue that is just contained in the brain, because there's also biopsychosocial and spiritual elements that feed into all of this. But the brain is a really important part to understand, and there's been a ton of research coming out, particularly Kevin McCauley from the Institute of the Addiction Study in Utah. They're finding that where addiction is affected in the brain is in the midbrain, which is the most primitive part of our brain. Most people think it would be in the prefrontal cortex, because that's the part of our brain which we talk about reasoning and decision-making, which, as we all know, often go out the window mm-hmm. when we're engaged in our addictive behavior. But that's actually not the case. It affects the midbrain, which really deals with the next 15 seconds, intense hunger, survival mechanisms, you know, just the things we need in this moment to survive. And so any time we take drugs, look at an internet where it's, you know, internet pornography or gambling or shopping or eating, it releases dopamine. And in that release of dopamine, which dopamine is our reward and pleasure pathway. So we need dopamine. When you eat a good meal, when you see your loved face, when you walk and see a sunset, dopamine is released.
Mm-hmm.
When you take cocaine, 10 times the amount of dopamine is released than when you see a sunset or eat your favorite meal. And so all of a sudden, we start to get this rush of dopamine, and we're in the beginning of an addiction, it's all about that rush. It's all about the pleasure. Where once an addiction really becomes integrated inside of you, we begin to have a broken pleasure system, and it's no longer using or engaging in eating food or whatever the struggle is for pleasure. It becomes about survival.
Okay. So what's a typical face of addiction that you find today? It goes across all ages and both sexes, as far as I can tell. There's no one group, right?
Right. I mean, that's really the most amazing thing about addiction, is that it doesn't discriminate.
Right.
I mean, it affects everyone of all class, all color, all race, all genders. Anyone is susceptible. But what makes us more susceptible is that there are parts of the brain in which we can be essentially less sensitive to dopamine. And so when you engage in something that really creates a surge of dopamine, all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, that felt good. I'm mm-hmm. not used to feeling that good. And so that gene really predisposes people to where you can have 10 people in a room and they all try cocaine. You know, one or two are going to actually become addicted.
Mm-hmm.
The others may or may not. And so there's really that piece of us that is beyond our control, which helps keep it engaged.
One interesting thing that I just wanted to interject there was about addiction not really discriminating. Even though that's the case, a lot of us have certain beliefs that are just very deep within us of what we think an addict is or looks like, and that's why many people who have issues with addiction don't believe necessarily that they're addicted at first, which is that first erroneous thought of denial. Because if any of the listeners or ourselves right now would take a moment, and if you're driving, don't close your eyes, but and you just would imagine what if you can think of someone who's an alcoholic, what picture pops up in the mind? For a lot of people, what pops in the mind is like a homeless person or someone that has filthy clothes or ragged clothes or broken teeth or, you know, a number of things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who is not very put together, when in fact there are a tremendous amount of people who have issues with addiction of all kinds who are who seem to function in the workplace at this point, or people that walk by us all the time. In my own family, I can think of as it goes back, you know, there's people who are tremendously functioning that definitely had issues with
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to start talking about this emerging treatment about mindful solutions. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guests are Dr. Stephanie Goldstein and Dr. Elisha Goldstein. We're talking about mindful solutions to addiction and avoiding relapse. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Would you like to enhance your relationship or improve your marriage? Do you need more help around the house or deserve more respect? Well, then tune in to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair next Monday at noon for some very simple and unusual secrets that get results and might just surprise you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Buzz.
And I'm Robin, reminding you to catch The Living Life Show Thursdays at 2 p.m. right here on KKNW.
The Living Life Show is your weekly guide to living life better both at home and away.
Each week, we bring you interesting guests and industry experts who share their tips for your home and your vacations.
We even have some great recipes for you to try, and you can even see us make them on our website.
You bet. So be sure to listen Thursday at 2 p.m. to The Living Life Show right here on KKNW.
Alternative Talk 1150 is now being broadcast in digital quality on FM 98.9 HD3. So rejoice, you early adopters of technology.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guests today are husband and wife team, Dr. Stephanie Goldstein and Dr. Elisha Goldstein. They're both clinical psychologists, and they're both practitioners and teachers of mindful solutions and stress-based reduction. And today we're talking about mindful solutions as it applies to addiction and avoiding relapse. So let's talk a little bit. Who wants to do this? let's talk a little bit about the basis of mindful solutions and what that means.
Okay. I think the basis of mindful solutions is, it is based in this area of awareness, that some people might say being able to be aware of the present moment and noticing our judgments so that we can be without them while we're being aware of the present moment. A lot of that does have its roots in over 2,000 years of wisdom coming from the Buddhist tradition. And thanks to, I'd say, Jon Kabat-Zinn and now Alan Marlatt, more particularly at the University of Washington, more particularly in the area of addiction and relapse prevention, they've helped kind of secularize it in a way, giving us language that's much more palatable to the Western tongue so that we can really integrate and understand these concepts. And the idea is that oftentimes, on a day-to-day basis, many of us, if not all of us, walk around in kind of an unconscious state of mind where we're only vaguely aware of our environment, our intentions, and particularly our actions in any given moment. I oftentimes give the example of how often are we driving on a freeway for only 5 minutes to go by without us knowing even how we got there at all.
Mm.
And that's often the autopilot that we're on. And so when it comes to addiction, we have triggers in our environment, an event that happens usually, that kicks us off balance and creates cravings or desires or thoughts in the mind, as well as urges, which are more like impulses in the body, somatically. And in applying mindfulness, this idea of being more aware of these things, we can learn to stop, take a breath, observe what's happening in our minds and bodies, become more aware of it, and then make a more conscious choice of what we want to do in any particular moment, rather than just taking the drink or picking up a cigarette or going to the email or committing or being in that sexual act or going shopping. And then only later to realize, wait, did I just do that? Is that me? Waiting till the time when there is an actual catastrophe, or waiting till a time where we are actually in deeper than we'd like to be.
Right. And this is being used in hospitals, I understand, and treatment centers around the country now.
Yep. Yeah, this is being used in mindfulness is being used in well over 250 hospitals around the country, many more around the globe now. I created a mindfulness-based group for people with stress, anxiety, depression, addiction in Kaiser Permanente as well, one of the largest HMOs in America. The reason it's being so well accepted is it really started in the medical community. Jon Kabat-Zinn came out and said, give me your, he went to the doctors in the chronic pain clinic at the University of Massachusetts and said, give me your people who you're unable to treat right now with medication. And basically through an 8-week program, what he allowed them to do is he allowed them to relate to their pain differently, taught them how to become more aware of it and notice the pain as it came and went. And by doing that, that stopped a reaction of hating the pain, judging the pain, making it worse, as we often do just with ourselves on any given day. And as by relating to it differently, they actually suffered less. And that's the notion behind this whole thing, is learning how to suffer less and becoming open to more of the joys that are available and the wonder that's available in every present moment.
Okay. Well, I'm really curious about how this helps urges and cravings, because they come upon us without warning often. And, you know, often I guess we are in that autopilot state, as you said earlier, and we just, you know, go to the refrigerator and grab what's ever there, or, you know, somebody might grab a beer, or somebody else might, you know, get online and start gambling. So how does this work to stop urges and cravings?
Well, there's a couple of ways. I first want to make a distinction between craving and urges that Dr. Marlatt defines, and that a craving is really the desire to experience the effects or engaging in addictive behavior. So really, you know, God, it'd be great to have a drink right now, or, you know, more, it's a thought, it's a desire, where an urge is a relatively sudden impulse to engage in the act. So it's all of a sudden it just comes over you. It's almost like it's a physical, visceral experience.
So you've almost always done it before you realize then.
Yeah, we're all of a sudden, exactly, and that's where the autopilot comes in, where if you're not really aware of your own body, if you're not aware of your own cravings and urges and triggers, you're engaged in the behavior before you even had a conscious choice. And so what mindfulness does is it really creates that moment, that pause, to where when you can use your breath and begin to breathe in and out and really start to check in with yourself and not judge, not try and change it, but just really be with the experience. You can begin to move through it. And Dr. Marlatt created a technique called urge surfing, which uses mindfulness and breath-focused meditation to help us ride out the urge.
Okay, now we'll say that again. It's urge surfing.
Urge surfing.
I like that idea. As a surfer chick, I like that idea.
So well, tell us. Story he tells is that he had a client who was a surfer, and when they were talking about this, his client related it to surfing, and that's really where this all came from.
Okay,
it is that you use your breath like a surfboard. And what we know about urges is they last about 30 minutes, and the first 20 minutes are usually the most difficult to get through. And so if you can use your breath to ride the urge as it gets bigger and crests and finally subsides, you can begin to realize that you can get on the other side of it. And in that, there's so much power, and the urges and cravings become less frequent and less intense, and our ability to be present and ride them becomes stronger and more powerful, and then which gives us back the control of our own lives.
Okay. Now, my question on this, Stephanie, is if somebody has a really strong impulse, they've got to have the wherewithal in the beginning to stop and be conscious of, hey, this is where I need to surf the urge, do the urge surfing. How do you advise people around that?
Well, a couple things. One is it takes practice. I mean, none of us can just say, okay, I'm going to notice now and
right.
this is going to work.
Right.
I mean, you know, the first many times you may not notice till after the fact. And then slowly you start to realize, you know, towards the end and then towards the middle. And then all of a sudden you're realizing before you've even engaged in the behavior. And another piece of it, and this is particularly important in the addiction world, is that it takes support. It takes community and it takes support. I mean, no one should be trying to do this stuff alone. It's incredibly powerful and difficult to do. And so to have a community, whether it's AA or NA or OA, or it's an actual, you know, in or outpatient clinic, or it's, you know, another such as Life Ring, to really connect to some community to get support around this is so crucial, as well as having patience and compassion for yourself, knowing that this is a practice and that it takes time to really develop.
Okay. I want to just address something that we talked a little bit about when Elisha was here before, and that was interpretation of events and the negative effect of those events and thinking styles. And I know, Elisha, when we were going backwards and forwards before the show, you said that this is a little different for addiction than it was when we were talking about depression.
Yeah, I think there's different styles of thinking. Well, there's two things. One is on the stress, anxiety, and depression CD. There wasn't as much talked about with interpretation of events. The big thing within the addiction field, or with somebody who has an addiction, is when they do interpret event, they interpret it as a weakness or as being a failure. These are two very strong judgments that we want to be aware of in our minds. For example, when someone who has an issue with alcohol does take a sip of alcohol, is that a slip or is that a full-blown relapse? Is the person weak and a failure now, or was that just a slip? The way we choose to interpret the events affects how we feel physically and also affects our mind. And so we want to be really aware of how we're interpreting the event in relation to the substance. We want to be really aware of our judgment. So in doing mindfulness, and as people would learn as they practice on the CD and also listen to the psychoeducational piece, they'll learn to become more aware of these judgments, learn how often they interpret things as a weakness or a failure. Those two in particular are really strong when it comes to addiction.
Mm.
We want to be aware of that with interpretation. With thoughts, there's more of a defensive style of thinking within addiction than within like anxiety and depression. So the first one is obviously denial. So we talk about this often in the addiction field, and you might have heard of this before. I don't have a problem with my drinking. We want to be aware of that style of thinking or with whatever addiction that is.
So total denial.
This idea of refusing to accept reality.
Mm. We also often hear with people it's the drugs talking or it's the drink talking. So how much does that come into play?
Well, you know, that really, it goes back to the brain. And then I was talking about how, you know, initially drug use or alcohol use or really engaging in any addictive behavior initially starts out as the pleasure part of it, that you're seeking to get the pleasure. But then after a certain point, when it sort of crosses that line, it's no longer even about getting high. It's about even feeling normal. And it's about using so that you don't experience the withdrawal symptoms.
Okay.
And so, you know, the drink is talking is really, I mean, it really points to that it's become a survival mechanism.
Okay. Elisha, did I cut you off earlier?
No, that's okay. No, that was perfectly fine. Another style of thinking that we want to be aware of, particularly with addiction and relapse prevention, is the idea of bargaining. This is the idea of, and we've all done this in our lives with one thing or another, this idea of trying to cut deals or set conditions for when things will be right to deal with the problem. For example, just not the right time now. I have someone coming in for the weekend, or I have this wedding to go to, or, you know, I have this party, my friend's, you know, 50th birthday or 30th birthday or whatever it is. I'll do it just after that, and then we'll be okay. So this idea of bargaining, that's a certain style of thinking that we want to be aware of. And in doing these practices, we can start to become aware more in the moment. And as Stephanie mentioned, it's only through practice that we can be aware in any particular, it helps prime us, is what I would say, for when the actual event is happening, to say, bargaining is happening right now. And just be aware of those thoughts associated with bargaining. If we turn our attention to them, we start to notice that they come and go. And then we also start to notice that urge as well. As we start to surf the urge, we start to notice that the physical sensations associated with that impulse, they come and they go. This idea of impermanence is so important in this approach.
Okay. Now, when I was doing my research, I came across the National Institute of Health and the Drug Abuse Principles of Drug Addiction Treatment. And number one on their Principles of Drug Addiction Treatment was no single treatment is appropriate for all individuals. Tell me how you find this works with most people. Does this work for most people?
I would say absolutely, because you're not looking at it as this is the only way to stop using or engaging in addictive behavior. This can really be a complement to anything that someone is doing.
Mm. Okay, and that was going to be my next question, because I am assuming some people obviously have to go through medical detox, and this alone wouldn't do it. So this would be part of a bigger treatment, it would be encompassed in a treatment package, if you like. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, by no means would we ever say that this alone could, you know, cure for certain people. It's really, for each person, you have to be evaluated. What are the drugs or alcohol that you're engaging in? What is the medical necessity that is involved with getting off of this? For some drugs and alcohol, there's no medical need. For others, there's really intense medical need, or you could die from withdrawal.
Mm.
And then there's the piece of, you know, how much support does this person have? How much family? How many resources? You know, so there's many things that go into looking into how we can best support a person. And this is one piece in which it's really easy to access. For one, we all have to breathe.
True.
Wherever we are, we're breathing. We have our breath.
True.
We can use it whether we're sitting on the bus, whether we're sitting in the office, we're at home with our kids. Whatever it is, we can use our breath to help regulate ourselves and to help, you know, as Dr. Marlatt says, use as a surfboard to be able to ride out the waves of the urge.
Okay. Well, obviously we're doing live radio, so we don't want any long pauses and gaps on the air, but because people think we've gone away. But walk us through a basic meditation. When somebody's feeling an impulse, like I'm feeling an impulse and I want to go eat that big box of, I don't know, Twinkies, whatever, or I want to, you know, get on the internet and start gambling, where would be my starting point?
Okay, good question. So that kind of brings asking again in a way the question of urge surfing.
Mm-hmm.
I would, very first thing to remember, I just want to preface this with the only way a person will really remember to do any of this stuff, and these are excellent tools for becoming more present, being able to move through the real addictive impulse and thoughts that are there, is by doing some sort of practice. And that's the whole reason we made our CD, is to give some education around it and to give three progressive practices for people to use to be able to recognize in a particular moment, like we're about to describe, how to do something like this when it's really happening. Or they can actually use it while it's happening. They can throw on the CD and actually listen to it, and that might help them too. So an example might be someone is, let's use alcohol since it's so prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who has an addiction to email can use it for this too. So just imagine whatever your substance of choice is.
I'm a recovering emailaholic.
I'm a recovering emailaholic. One thing that might happen is you might notice that after a particularly hard day or after a difficult interaction, maybe that might tip us off balance. Whatever our substance we're using, let's use alcohol again as an example. Someone might be driving past a bar, let's say, an old bar that they used to frequent.
Mm.
As they drive by it, they might notice, or they might not be aware, but what might be happening is the mouth might be salivating. That might be part of the physical impulse that's there to go into the bar. A thought might pop up, a bargaining or a bargaining type of thought. It couldn't hurt just to pop in and see my old friend. I'm not going to really have a drink. Don't worry, I'm just going to go in and see my friend. As that happens, thoughts may come up, arguing for and against, going in or not. What might happen then is as soon as somebody becomes aware of that, this is what would happen. They'd be aware of that sort of thought process going up. They might be aware of bargaining happening right now. And they might even say that, wrap it up in their mind and just say bargaining is happening right now. Take a breath. Notice the breath coming in and out. By doing that, we're grounding ourselves to the present moment, getting ourselves ready to be able to really make a choice of what we want to do. And then we might notice the actual more of the physical sensations that are there. We might notice some heavy breathing in the chest. We might notice warmth coming to the chest as well, stiffness in the shoulders. We might start labeling that as it's happening in the body. And as it's happening, we might also notice our thoughts starting over time to kind of dissipate and starting to think about something else maybe we had to do that weekend or looking forward to a certain event. Or we might start noticing the sensations in the body, like Stephanie said, an urge lasts 20 to 30 minutes, really. And so we might start noticing that to start to dissipate as we continue to use the breath kind of as a surfboard, once again, of noticing those sensations as they rise, as they crest. That's the peak. That's when it's the strongest. And then as they subside. That's once again, using this informally in the moment while it's happening.
Okay, and then there's also formal practice, but let's go take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about that a little. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guests are Dr. Stephanie Goldstein and Dr. Elisha Goldstein. We're talking about mindful solutions to addiction and avoiding relapse.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Everyone loves an attractive, healthy, brilliant smile. From Julia Roberts to Tom Cruise to Halle Berry. Nowadays, a gorgeous, healthy smile isn't just for the rich and famous, you know. Tune in to Dr. Q's Smile Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 2, and find out how you, too, can achieve, maintain, and tap into the power of a brilliant, healthy smile. Dr. Q's Smile Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 2.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show at its new time, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Tired of the insanity of other talk radio stations? Just click your radio knob and say, "There's no place like Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guests are Dr. Stephanie Goldstein and Dr. Elisha Goldstein. Their latest audio CD that they've just released is called Mindful Solutions to Addiction and Avoiding Relapse. And before the break, we were talking about an informal practice that we could put into the moment when we're in the middle of having an impulse. Let's talk a little bit about how you apply formal practice to your life.
Okay.
Who wants to take that one?
Okay. So yeah, no, I'll grab that one. So formal practice. So this for the difference between a formal practice and an informal practice is an informal practice is something that happens really kind of more. I'd say, spontaneous in your daily life, being able to be present to the moment. One example of an informal practice is the acronym STOP. Stop, take a breath. So we can take a breath in and out, notice it in and out, and then by doing that, we're grounding ourselves to the present moment. Observe. So in observing, we're observing our environment, what's happening, our thoughts. We may notice that our mind is racing right now, or having any particular catastrophizing or bargaining or denial, whatever is going on. And then in that moment, we can also notice what emotions are there, anger, happiness, sadness, physical sensations, and then we can proceed in any particular way we want to. We can also practice mindfulness while washing the dishes, noticing the warmth of the water, the coolness of it. If the dish is clean or dirty, just noticing that, or in the shower. We can learn to be present to our senses in any particular moment. That's really an informal practice. A formal practice is when we intentionally set time aside to actually do a practice of mindfulness. These are what are on the CD more of. So a person will notice on tracks 4, 5, and 6, there's a progression of a breathing practice, which is a basic practice within mindfulness. Then there's a body awareness practice. And in this practice, we're particularly bringing people through noticing distressing sensations in their body and being aware of them as they come and go, because that's often what happens in a moment of an addictive behavior. Is that there's some sort of distress happening. And instead of being able to feel that distress, whether it's an emotion, an uncomfortable emotion, or an uncomfortable physical sensation, a person will grab for whatever the substance is to appease that, rather than just becoming aware of it, noticing it as it comes and goes. So we practice that within this body awareness practice. And the next one is more of an integrative practice that brings all those together, as well as being able to turn our attention to our thoughts, so in our daily life we can become more aware of these defensive or distorted styles of thinking that are there, or whatever even distressing thoughts or cravings might be there in our mind, or desires, noticing them as they come and go. If we weren't aware of them, that's when they grab hold of us, when they're unconscious, when we're on autopilot. That's when they grab hold of us and turn us to whatever our addictive substance is, and once again, us not really being that aware of it until after we've consumed it.
Okay. What do you see, Stephanie? I know you treat all kinds of addictions. What do you see as the biggest challenge with most people in applying mindful practices, mindful solutions?
Well, like we said earlier, it's a practice. So
right.
Really, you know, for someone to be able to feel connected to the practice and actually practice it. I mean, it is such a profoundly difficult thing to do, to give up an addiction, whether it's eating or gambling or using drugs and alcohol. And a person has to really be in the space that this is what they want. And so when you're trying to engage someone who is what, you know, is called in their denial, which quote-unquote means, you know, they're not ready. For whatever reason, it has taken them by hold so strong, and that sometimes we talk about that people have different bottoms, and that for some people, it's just looking around their life and saying, ooh, I don't like where this is going. For other people, they've had to lose their house, their spouse, their job, you know, everything. And so it's really important to meet a person where they're at and work with them and really guide them. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we created these CDs, is that, I mean, I know in my own meditation practice that I've really struggled with sitting down and actually meditating and how to incorporate this into my daily life. And I have found that I'm able to do it most successfully when I'm guided.
When you're guided?
Yeah, which is why we created the actual guided meditations on the CD. It makes such a difference for me to be able to sit down and say, okay, I'm going to listen right now.
Mm-hmm.
And when my mind wanders, as it inevitably will, whether it's after 1 second, 10 seconds, 2 minutes, 10 minutes, our minds wander, the CD helps bring me back to the present moment and refocuses me.
And Elijah, I know that you had a patient with an eating disorder that you wanted to share their story with us and how this applied.
Yeah, I think this is a really, thanks for bringing that up. I think this is a really important story simply because so many, especially in this country now more than ever, so many of us are afflicted with eating disorders, as well as, and eating disorders is really a really difficult one because we all have to eat food. And, you know, we have a tremendous issue in this country with obesity now with kids and with adults. And this person came in to me with, who is tremendously obese, and really one of her main issue, her main struggles was with food. She really couldn't eat less than a cake, a full cake at a time. Every time she passed a bakery, she had to go in and get something. And this was because, more than anything, her mind would be so distressing, and she would actually have an ache in her chest when she would walk by these places. In order to appease that, she ate. And she was afflicted with many different kinds of uncomfortable emotions, ranging from sadness, shame, to guilt, only to appease it temporarily and then it being reinforced afterwards, even stronger after she ate. Almost anybody with issues with addictive behavior can relate to that. So what I did was we worked with this idea of urge surfing. And so we did practices within session that brought her through connecting with her breath, being able to notice the breath coming in and out. And in doing that, all that's doing is it's using the breath to bring us to the present moment, because the breath is always with us. So we can always use it to bring us to the present moment. And then what we did was we went through a series of imaginal exercises where she was able to walk past a bakery, notice her physical sensations that were going on in that moment, and notice her cravings as well, her desires to go in there, her real want, and her thoughts and imaginings about all the good food in there. And the saliva coming up in her mouth and her tightening of her chest, we were able to watch that. She was able to bring her attention to it and notice it non-judgmentally. What I mean by that is notice the actual judgments that were associated with it, put them aside, and be able to come back to noticing the physical sensations. And what she noticed was, after a certain amount of time, those did come and go. So she began to realize that this urge does, in fact, come and go. And so then she went and walked past the bakery, she was able to stand in front of it and do that same exercise, noticing it coming and going, and then as it passed, being able to walk by it. And then what she was able to do is actually walk into the bakery, not necessarily buy any food, but get a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
And be able, in the past, thinking that she could never do that before, being able to sit with her distress, and over time that distress lessened, and she was able to go in there and actually enjoy that time.
That was a key thing, that remembering that 20 to 30 minute urge, the impulse, and then hence surfing the urge, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and for our listeners out there, I mean, think about it. Have you ever had an experience of joy, and did it pass? Have you ever had an experience of frustration or anger, and did it pass?
Right, right.
And so really being able to kind of hold, even in the moment, even in when you're in the experience, hold the perspective that all things come and go. Even the worst situations will change and get better, and the best situations change and sometimes go bad.
Right. So let's say I know we're never cured when we have an issue like that, but let's say we've been sober or whatever and we have a relapse. What's the key to getting back on track as quickly as possible?
I mean, I think one of the keys is to be aware of, as we mentioned earlier, that those judgments that will come up. I'm a failure. I'm weak. And be able to notice those as thoughts, because if we're unaware of them, they'll grab hold of us and throw us into a spiral. If we think about it, the thought, I am a failure or I am weak, if you think about that thought and then notice, how does it make your body feel when those thoughts come up? Most people would say lethargic, tired. Okay, so if that's there, what kind of emotions come up? Shame, guilt. Okay, if that's there, what kind of behavior necessarily usually ensues? Well, I don't want to feel those feelings. What helps you not feel those feelings? My substance.
Mm.
Okay. So you can see how that cycle happens.
Yes,
so if
exactly.
we can cut it off and notice when that happens, notice when those thoughts come up, or notice when those feelings are there, approach them instead of avoid them, and notice them as just that, thoughts and feelings, and be able to notice them as they come and go. That'll change things. One thing I just want to reinforce here is everything we're talking about here, some of it might seem kind of abstract, and it's actually very practical. And if you do get a hold of the CD and listen to it, or any kind of mindfulness practice, there's a mindfulness-based relapse prevention program near you or a mindfulness-based stress reduction program near you, I'd encourage you to check them out. But if you do get the CD, you'll be able to actually work with these practices so that when it does happen in the moment, you'll be more skilled at being able to use them and move through that moment.
Okay, sounds good. And I know you share a lot of poetry on your website, and there's one in particular that you are very fond of. Why is poetry important to you? And then I'm going to ask you to read the one by Rumi before we leave today.
Well, you know, one of the reasons that I think we both feel poetry is so important, as well as really any creative expression, any artistic expression, is that the creative spirit is such an important part of us, and often in addiction is locked away, you know, and at the same time we hear about some of the greatest artists of our times having really severe addictions, and so there's some pretty strong link between creativity and addiction, and that poetry is really another way to touch our soul and okay. to reach ourselves and can speak to us sometimes when conversations can't or experiences can't, and so it has really touched both of us.
Okay, we have 2 minutes, so if you can get your poem in there, we can do it.
I think we can.
No problem.
So this is by Rumi, who is a 13th century Sufi poet, and the poem is called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweeps your house empty of its furniture, still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond.
That's quite lovely, and I want to thank you for reading that, and I want to thank you for being with us today and sharing some insights onto this emerging treatment called Mindful Solutions. And I also want to make sure that our listeners have your website in case they want to go there, and you've got quite a bit more information on there, but we're short on time, so let's go ahead and give out your website.
Our website is www.drsgoldstein.com, so that's D-R-S Goldstein, G-O-L-D-S-T-E-I-N.com.
Okay, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure again.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
And we'll have this up on the website within a couple of days, so if you missed any part of today's show and want to listen to it again, check out conversationslive.net and we'll have it up there. My guests again, Dr. Stephanie Goldstein and Dr. Elisha Goldstein, and their latest audio, which has just been released in CD format, is called Mindful Solutions to Addiction and Avoiding Relapse. And I want to thank everyone for joining us today. We really appreciate you being with us and tuning in every week. If you've got questions or feedback on today's show, you can reach me at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or you can go to the website at conversationslive.net. And again, there are podcasts up there, featured shows that you can listen to. And I also want to thank the JMB Group for their continued support of Conversations Live. Very much appreciate it. And I want to say also thanks to Eric Ryder, who keeps us ticking on live every week. And thanks for being with us. And please join me next Monday. Who have we got coming up next week? Amy Sutherland. So be with us next Monday at noon. Meanwhile, please have a good week. Live well, live strong.
Would you like to enhance your relationship or improve your marriage? Do you need more help around the house or deserve more respect? Well, then tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair next Monday at noon for some very simple and unusual secrets that get results and might just surprise you.
Views expressed on the preceding program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station.